This is Classic Rain number 8 for November 8, 2019. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Harry Danell's W2HD is considered by many as the father of no code. He was licensed in 1946 at age 19. Harry's accomplishments include his being awarded Lifetime President Emeritus for serving as president of both the ARRL, American Radio Relay League, from 1972 to 1982, and later president of QCWA, the Quarter Century Wireless Association, from 1989 to 1994. It was QCWA's proposal that resulted in today's no-code technician license. Here are our final excerpts from Hap Holly KC9RP's 1993 interview with Harry.
Where did the idea ever come up that Morse code was a filter, a tool to help screen those who would be considered quote-unquote worthy of being ham operators?
I honestly can't answer that one because I don't know, and yet a lot of people have said that it was a very important filter. I do not consider it an important filter. I know there are some people who have difficulty learning the Morse code, but as a Navy radio operator, one who was skilled in Morse code at about 30 words a minute before I ever put on my Navy uniform as a Navy radio operator, I found that a lot of people could learn Morse code. They had to hit them the right way in school with the right intensity. It does take some perseverance for some people, and there are certainly a few folks in the world who probably do not have the time sense to distinguish dots and dashes or dits and dahs. There are not too many of those people, so I really believe it's a question of applying oneself, and that's why some of the old-timers have said that these no-code folks haven't, quote, paid their dues, unquote. However, I don't really go along with that. I'm happy to see them here, and I think that as they find that the code isn't too hard, they've begun to embrace it. And we have upgraded a number of no-code techs to coded techs and novices and all the way up into general and beyond.
Harry, one of the challenges that we face with the new hams who are getting on 2 meters without any novice experience like they used to break any bad habits or learn some good amateur practices that perhaps don't come naturally, is some of the language, I don't mean four-letter words, I mean some of the terminology, excessive use of Q signals and some of the CB lingo that comes with it. Some people get very, very wrought up about that, and others say, well, hey, what does it really matter? What's your feeling about that?
Well, I have a chuckle on my face now, because that's the subject that does bother me, and I feel offers a challenge to us as the old-timers or the people who first interface with these folks. There have been a number of articles written by authors who have noted the rejection of some of the newer no-code techs on the repeaters. I don't do that at all. I welcome them with open arms. And the request or suggestion that if they have any questions at all, they should call me either on the local repeater or on the telephone, and I'd be happy to help them. If I see them using terminology, which is obviously of another service in the radio spectrum, CB, I correct them and say those are not terms that we normally find used in amateur radio. We would suggest that you use instead, and I would give them the normal way that we conduct ourselves on a 2-meter band. That has not met with much opposition. In fact, to tell you the truth, the usual term is, gee, thanks very much, I didn't really realize, and if you hadn't told me, I wouldn't have known that I was doing something which was, not readily accepted. So when you embrace these people and put a helping hand out to them, they accept it. They are radio amateurs. They have a license that is just as important as yours and mine. It was issued by the same government, the same FCC, and we just have to make sure that we embrace them into the hobby as others used to let us join. To tell you the truth, the absolute fact, I think that some of our older, higher-class amateurs on the air are demonstrating themselves very negatively. Fortunately, there aren't a lot of them, but there are enough so that occasionally I don't even want to tune across some of our bands with a visitor in the shack.
Is that due to just simply the fact that the older we get, the more we tend to want to have things stay the same and are averse to change?
There's a certain amount of that which is probably prevalent, but I wrote an article for the QCWA Journal as a president's message to our members. It basically was the theme that the good old days are tomorrow. And personally, at my age now, I'm approaching 66, I do believe that sincerely. I think the best times are still to come. And I cited in my words some of the old-time things that we had and how really things were so much better. Part of the problem we have today is society itself having become somewhat more permissive, and the Supreme Court of our country not really able to define right and wrong, both in regards to speech and writing written material and other things. That, I think, has caused us far more trouble than anything else.
You know, it used to be so simple, what was right and what was wrong. And today it's gotten so wrapped up in legalities and lawyers and courts and special interest groups. It's very, very challenging. Amateur radio tends to be a mirror of society. That is, we tend to mirror what is going on in society value-wise. And I think today especially we see it happening with use of language and subject matter and overall courtesy or lack thereof. Do you foresee amateur radio departing from that at all in the near future, or will it just continue to reflect what society does?
Well, I don't think it reflects it as much as one might think, Hap, and there's a reason for it. And I've made this comment in forums around the nation as I traveled. I traveled to all 50 states as president and spoke at amateur radio gatherings in all 50 states. And I think amateur radio is a great equalizer. When I'm talking to someone on the air, I don't know whether they're black, green, pink, or orange, and frankly, I don't care, because we're exchanging thoughts, and that's the important thing. When I'm talking to someone on the air, I don't know whether they're Republican, Democrat, communist, socialist, or no political persuasion, and I don't care, because we're exchanging ideas. And when it comes to the other one, religion, I don't know whether they're Roman, Catholic, Protestant, Mohammedan, Hebrew, and once again, I don't care, because we're exchanging ideas. We don't see one another. I sometimes think that if the governments of the world didn't see one another, we might have more peace in the world.
That's an interesting observation, because you're right. I'm a blind ham, and unless someone asks me or knows me, they have no idea.
I never would have known, Hap, from hearing you talk on your program from time to time until I met you at Dayton at the last hamvention.
Which is part of the fun of it.
You're listening to a 1993 conversation with Harry Danels, W2HD, considered by many as the father of No Code. Harry was awarded Lifetime President Emeritus for serving as president of both the ARRL and later president of QCWA. QCWA recognized Harry for his 70 years of service to amateur radio in 2016. We'll conclude our 1993 interview with Harry in a moment. This is Classic Rain number 8. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Classic Rain from www.therainreport.com.
Is there too much emphasis being placed on getting children and young people in amateur radio at the expense of minorities or senior citizens?
You hit one that's another one that I'm interested in. I have said many times, and I'll go to an extreme on this one and go to the opposite side of the age spectrum. I said in one of my reports to the ARRL before I ceased being president that we should not only look at programs for youth, but we should look at programs for those people entering or in their golden years, because in retirement or older years, people have time to spend frequently, some have a little income, and some cannot travel. But when I look at the possibilities of traveling via amateur radio and talking to people overseas and getting a discussion with a man in London, England about the weather over there, or somebody in Central South America or in Australia or someplace like that, that's a wonderful opportunity for a retired person. Now, we don't do enough of that. The league did have a program down in the Tampa, St. Petersburg, Clearwater area of Florida, and I think it showed promise. It takes a lot of effort. I gave two talks here at local senior citizen meetings about amateur radio, but I can say that I only picked up maybe one potential new ham, and that person is in one of our classes right now. But even that is a successful jaunt, and I hope that that one person will tell some other senior citizen, and who knows. Insofar as the underprivileged, that's an area they say that I haven't worked in sufficiently. I almost did when I was still employed. We had a very fine minority engineer who was interested in amateur radio and didn't have a license himself. And I told him that it probably would not be proper for me to enter that minority group and preach amateur radio, but that if he would get his license and I'd help him do it, that he could be a catalyst. It just didn't work out. He was transferred to another part of the corporation out of the state, and the program died, but it had potential.
There are proposals out now to restructure amateur radio licensing. That is to boil it down to two or three classes of license. Because there is one school of thought that says having all these different classes of license is, to use a term we've talked about already, divisive. What's your thought on that?
Well, I think that it will happen. I don't know personally whether I'll agree with it completely. I think that it will have a great deal of controversy because people will see it as lessening the standards because it will undoubtedly produce higher grade licenses from people who have not necessarily passed the elements. However, I have a very difficult time in my own mind dividing the 20-meter band or any of our phone bands in half and saying that a person who has a general class license and can operate equipment cannot operate on the kilocycle next to it in the advanced class portion. The technical requirements, the ability, and so forth are equal. And I know that at one time when they had the incentive licensing, they had to do something because that was the way incentive licensing worked. But it's hard to justify why a person cannot operate the entire 20-meter phone band with any kind of license that originally allowed for operation there, and why were they halved in their spectrum allotment. There's no difference in operating 14-200 or 14-300, and yet some licensees can't go down to 14-200. And I think that that, to a degree, is deplorable.
We really can't talk about amateur radio without talking about the FCC. What were your dealings like with the FCC when you were president of the ARRL?
They were actually pretty good. I had one difficult argument that had to do with the early days of repeaters and repeater control. I actually believe that my discussion with, at that time, A-Pros Walker, W4BW, I was in his office and we were talking about repeater control.
Now, who was he?
He was then the chief of the Amateur and Citizens. I don't recall whether that was the title of those days, but he was the head of the amateur branch in the FCC. A-Pros Walker, W4BW. He's now retired and lives down in Florida. And in his office, we discussed repeaters and repeater control. And I felt that the repeater should be considered as a black box, and the person transmitting the signal should be responsible for the content of what was said, and not the owner of the black box. They, on the other hand, took the point that the owner of the black box was responsible since it was his equipment through which these transmissions were going, and thus became the requirement for a control operator, someone monitoring the repeater 24 hours a day or as long as it was actually on the air. Later, of course, that was all changed. And I remember the discussion with the commission. They said, well, when you show that you can do this without problems, then perhaps we'll invite some proposals to change the rules and lessen the requirement for control. Well, eventually they did, but I felt they could have done it at the time. My opinion of the commission overall is that they've done a good job in controlling the many facets of communications that they have to control. The three things that they have done, in my opinion, which were the best for amateur radio overall, and not necessarily in order, but I'll give them an order of occurrence, the creation of the novice license, the creation of the volunteer examiner system, and finally, the most recent, the creation of the no-code tech. Those three things have done more for amateur radio than anything else that has been done in the decades that I've observed the commission's control of amateur radio.
And lastly, I want to get out your crystal ball. This is 1993. What changes do you foresee happening in amateur radio come the year 2000 or later?
I truly believe that most of amateur radio will go along the present route that it is going, but I see greater uses of digital communications for the transmission of pictures, greater use of amateur satellites. The Oscar program is going to require some reaching into the pocket by the radio amateurs, but the value of the Oscar program and some of the smaller satellites that are up there now, the PacSat and so forth, that the store and forward information and so forth, those are logical growth items in amateur radio, as we always will continue to strive to make our communications faster and more efficient.
And what direction do you see the league taking over the next 10 years?
I think they'll continue to be what they have been for us all along, a great guardian of the rights of the radio amateur, always on the scene, perhaps every once in a while adopting something which might have a little controversy attached to it. But I don't believe they have ever lost sight of the fact that amateur radio is something that they, in this country, are the spokesman for. And they've done a good job of it. I hope that the current president, George Wilson, continues to work with the board and produce progress in amateur radio. I think the league will do a good job for us.
This has been a conversation with Harry Danels, W2HD, conducted by Rain Report founder Hap Holly, KC9RP, in 1993. A longtime resident of Charlottesville, Virginia, Harry was recipient of Lifetime President Emeritus for serving as president of both the ARRL, American Radio Relay League, from 1972 to 1982, and later president of QCWA, the Quarter Century Wireless Association, from 1989 to 1994. It was QCWA's proposal that resulted in today's no-code technician license. Harry was awarded the 1993 Dayton Hamvention Ham of the Year. Harry was also recognized for 70 years of service to amateur radio by QCWA in 2016. Harry observes his 92nd birthday in 2019. 73, Harry! That does it for Classic Rain number 8, a biweekly production of the Radio Amateur Information Network. Copyright from the beginning of Ham Radio, or 1989 to 2019, Rain. All rights reserved. We'll be back November 22nd with episode number 9. Very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Keep on hamming!